The United States says that North Korea has not responded to its behind-the-scenes diplomatic maneuvers on Pyongyang's nuclear activities. Anti-racism protesters rally in two U.S. cities to mark 1 year since African-American Breonna Taylor was shot dead by police. And British police come under fire for using force against people holding a vigil in London in honor of a woman kidnapped and killed by an officer. Good day, everyone. Welcome to World News here in the Iranian capital. I'm your host, Badr Sajjadeh. Good to have you with us. The United States says that North Korea has not responded to its behind-the-scenes diplomatic push for talks since mid-February. A senior official of the administration, President Joe Biden, says that Washington has used several channels to reach out to Pyongyang, but to no avail. According to the unnamed official, there has been no active dialogue for more than a year, despite multiple U.S. attempts. Former President Donald Trump and North Korean leader Kim Jong-un met twice in 2018 and 2019 for denuclearization of the Korean Peninsula. The engagement failed as Washington refused to relieve any sanctions in return for Pyongyang's goodwill measures. The Biden administration has not publicized its approach to North Korea, but saying that it's carrying out a policy review. Activist and political analyst Ryan Dawson says that the U.S. joint war games with South Korea are a major stumbling block to talks with North Korea.
The way that Donald Trump was able to get a meeting with North Korea during his presidency is because they paused the war games from November to November, one full year in 2018. That is why they were able to get to the negotiation table. And then they got rid of the Foul Eagle and Key Resolve, and there were talks in Hanoi. And then, of course, John Bolton said that they were going to give them the Libya option, and everything fell apart. And there wasn't much talk after that because they replaced these war game exercises with a new war game exercise called Dongmang. It's just scaled down a little bit, but it still does mock invasions. It still puts artillery within range of North Korea. This is what they're worried about. And all the South Koreans and the United States would have to do is stop the war games, and then they could start negotiating cooperative economic zones and go back to the six-party talks from the 90s, the only time they were ever making any headway forward. You know, handshakes and photo ops or something, but nothing really concrete got done.
The U.S. Defense Secretary says that he's traveling to Asia to boost military cooperation and strengthen partnerships with American allies. Lloyd Austin says that the U.S. and its allies want to make sure that they have the capability to, quote, offer credible deterrence to China or anybody else who would want to take on the U.S. Austin kicked off his first foreign visit as a Pentagon chief via Hawaii, the seat of the American military command in the Pacific region. His trip will take him to India, Japan, and South Korea, where he is to hold meetings with top officials. He'll also be joined in Tokyo and Seoul by Secretary of State Antony Blinken. The Biden administration insists that a tough approach to China can be more effective by shoring up alliances. Now, in other U.S.-related news, Black Lives Matter activists have rallied in the city of Louisville, Kentucky, to mark 1 year since African-American Breonna Taylor was shot dead by police. Protesters held up signs and chanted slogans including No Justice, No Peace as they marched through the streets. Taylor's mother was also among the protesters to demand justice for her daughter. A similar event was held in New York City with ralliers saying justice is yet to serve 1 year after Breonna's killing. They argued that equity does not exist among American citizens.
It's been a year since Breonna Taylor's death, and there's really no justice yet. And her death was really unnecessary. Her life needs to be valued. And it's important to be here and remind everyone that we haven't forgotten, and that justice still needs to be served.
especially as a white person, it's really important to stand up and have solidarity with the community and say, this is not right. I benefit from the privilege that I have, and I want to change that so that that kind of inequity doesn't exist. I know that if it was me in that apartment, I probably wouldn't have been shot and killed.
The 26-year-old black woman was caught in the crossfire during a police raid on her apartment. The law enforcement officers, who were looking for a friend, obtained a controversial no-knock warrant to make a drug-related arrest. The FBI says its probe into the incident has made significant progress. Failure to bring homicide charges against the officers has sparked several demonstrations in Louisville. Taylor's death is seen as one of the many cases of police violence and racism which triggered Black Lives Matter protests in the U.S. and elsewhere in the world. Now, 1 year after it started, the U.S. coronavirus response has been infamously ineffective from a social, economic, or health standpoint. From preventing deaths to preventing poverty, corona has revealed deep socioeconomic divides, which have already worsened over the last terrible 12 months. Rami Mazahari has more from Chicago.
On March 13th, then-United States President Donald Trump declared the coronavirus to be a national emergency. 1 year later, many believe that the world's richest country has had the world's worst national response to the pandemic. At over a 500,000 fatalities, the U.S. has twice as many deaths as the second hardest hit nation, Brazil. Many attribute that to the U.S. being alone among developed nations in having an almost entirely for-profit healthcare system.
It's been an extremely tough year, which is atrocious for the richest country on earth. You know, China and much of Southeast Asia have been managed to control the virus. Much poorer countries, Australia and New Zealand, which are, you know, English-speaking capitalist countries, have managed to contain the virus. So the U.S. response is, you know, from the government's really pathetic at this point.
The U.S. emulated China's example by calling for lockdowns, but they came without the governmental safety net nor the cultural solidarity which such mass quarantines seem to require. The resulting economic and personal devastation is still too enormous to be fully grasped, but the lockdowns clearly penalized the lower classes the most, caused inequality to soar, and resulted in the nation's worst economic situation since the Great Depression. The virus hit poor and non-white communities disproportionately hard, and then when the U.S. developed vaccines, these communities have been disproportionately excluded from receiving them.
A major reason for the poor U.S. response is, you know, how decentralized and dysfunctional the system is. And on the other hand, the lack of, you know, a militant, independent working class movement to really fight and demand those things that people in other countries are getting. If we had that sort of militant working class organization, we could have made those demands. The ruling class, the capitalists, would have probably conceded more.
The pandemic came amid, or maybe contributed to, major social protests towards racist policing, a bitterly disputed presidential election, and the hardening of unprecedented social divisions over the past year. The United States has pinned its recovery not on making structural changes, but on the vaccines that they have been able to produce. Should the vaccines fail to prevent a third major corona wave this spring, the resulting socioeconomic and cultural disaster would reach uncharted territory. Rami Mazahari, Chicago.
Now back to Europe. London police have come under fire for restraining and arresting several people at a vigil for a woman who was kidnapped and killed by an officer. Officers have scuffled with protesters after hundreds rallied despite coronavirus restrictions. Organizers condemn police actions, saying that officers physically manhandled women at the event that was held to call attention to dangers women facing in London. Meantime, the Home Secretary and the London Mayor demand explanations from the police, while Liberal Democrats calling for the Metropolitan Police Chief to resign. A London police officer has been charged with kidnapping and murdering Sarah Everard. She disappeared on March the 3rd while walking home from a friend's home. Well, I talked to a correspondent in London, Ahmed Caballo, and he says that the UK police failed both in terms of the response to the Sarah Everard vigil and the responsibility to protect young women like her.
Now, around the same time as this tragic case, there was a YouGov poll that said 97% of women, young women, have been harassed in public spaces, 80% of all women. Now, yesterday there was a vigil in South London in Clapham. I attended this vigil. It was expected to be a quiet vigil, yet the police used very heavy-handed nature to disperse the vigil, arrested several women, and this has only added to the anger on the ground. Now, the vigil was called off by the British Home Office, and people were advised to stay away. But nonetheless, the way the police reacted was completely disproportionate, particularly considering the sensitivity of this case, as the accused is a sitting Metropolitan Police officer, and many people were shouting at the police officers that were arresting women, arrest your own, i.e. sort out your own institution, which has been accused of two very grievous crimes here. Not only did a City Metropolitan Police officer allegedly kidnap and murder a woman while walking home, but apparently, a couple of days before that, he exposed himself in an indecent way in a McDonald's restaurant. And had he been arrested and charged for that, then Sarah Everard would still be alive today. That's why people are angry.
Yeah, that's what in Europe. Protesters in the French city of Lyon have taken to the streets to protest the controversial security bill. The rally was organized by activists and families of victims of police brutality. Demonstrators voiced opposition to the bill, slamming it as a violation of their rights. The motion seeks to restrict circulation of images of police violence. It would also extend police surveillance powers through the use of CCTV and drones. The bill is expected to go before the Senate on March 16th. The critics say that the measures restrict civil liberties. An important activist of boycott, divestment, and sanctions in France is set to be judged for her role in the boycott campaign of the Tel Aviv regime. Now, this while the European Court of Human Rights calls the BDS campaign legitimate. Our correspondent Paris has more on that.
In a rarely seen demonstration of unity, the French solidarity movement with Palestine showed its support for Olivia Zemmour, one of the pillars of the BDS movement. Olivia will be judged next week for her participation in BDS actions. The official accusation, anti-Semitism, an insult towards a foreign state. BDS stands for Boycott, Divestment and Sanctions Against Israel.
There is no legal base to condemn me, and therefore I hope that the judges will remain independent from the political powers. By the way, the French state accepts boycott actions against China, Corsica, or against Russia and Iran. They accept that Brigitte Bardot boycotts Canadian products because of mistreating seals. But if we boycott Israel, they say it's discrimination.
The French government is acting against an important resolution of the European Court of Human Rights. This court decided in June last year that BDS is a legal political movement and obliged the French state to pay 100,000 euros to falsely condemned BDS activists. However, the French Justice Minister, Éric Dupond-Moretti, gave instructions to prosecutors, magistrates and judges in France to condemn appeals to boycott Israeli products. Since 2005, Olivia Zemmour is one of the main organizers of the BDS campaign in France, with remarkable actions in supermarkets. These kind of actions were considered worldwide as keystones and have been copied in many other countries. Other type of actions were held in official institutions like the French Football Federation to protest against the silence of Europe when Israel jailed, injured or killed footballers in Gaza. A third type of actions were protests when delegations to Palestine were withheld by Air France under direct Israeli pressure.
BDS, the Boycott, Divestment, Sanctions Campaign, it's very important for us as a Jewish organization to support Palestinian rights, to tell Israel that it must respect international law and that it can't get away with murder. It can't get away with just anything. And this fallacious accusation of anti-Semitism just doesn't hold water.
Today, Israel considers the BDS campaign as a real danger for its propaganda system. Therefore, it uses all kinds of pressure on Western states to criminalize it. But the Palestinian Solidarity Movement stands still and alert. As observers say, if the French government wanted to respect the recommendation of the European Court of Human Rights, it would simply cancel this trial against an important BDS activist. Chris Denhant, Paris.
The detention of hundreds of Rohingya refugees in Indian-controlled Jammu and Kashmir has triggered a panic among the destitute community living in India. As Munawar Zaman reports, the rights groups have urged India to halt the move, as the community has already fled genocidal violence in their home country, putting their lives in even greater danger. We have a report from New Delhi.
Refugee camp in the suburbs of New Delhi is gripped in utter panic and despair. After hundreds were rounded last week and detained in Jammu region of Indian-controlled Jammu and Kashmir for possible deportation, according to police and local administration there.
We have no idea of what will happen to us. We are living here peacefully. We will survive on just one meal a day, but we urge the Indian government not to deport us because the military there will kill us. We are thankful to have got shelter in India. At least we are alive.
Minority Rohingya Muslims have for decades fled to neighboring Bangladesh and other countries, including India, escaping genocide in their country. Estimates suggest some 40,000 Rohingya refugees are living across different states of India.
Anti-Rohingya sentiments have been rising in India since the emergence of the Hindu nationalist government of the Bharatiya Janata Party in 2014. The ruling party calls the Rohingya people illegal immigrants and a security threat. Many vicious anti-Rohingya campaigns in the Jammu region also called for their expulsion a few years ago, leaving the community in great distress.
Fearing arrest and possible detention, many have gone into hiding, while others are in panic. Activists say it's unfair to detain or deport them, considering the situation in their country.
Already the refugees have started calling me up, and many have already sent me messages on the phone, apprehending danger to themselves and their community. We will take to both national and international campaigning to safeguard the security, dignity and safety of the Rohingya refugees as well as all other refugees in India.
Human Rights Watch and other rights groups have urged India to halt any deportation plan, saying conditions in Myanmar are not conducive. They say the Indian government should uphold its international law obligations and protect those in need of refuge within its borders. India has hosted refugees from many countries since decades, but adopted an aggressive approach towards Rohingya Muslims in particular. Munawar Zaman in the outskirts of New Delhi.
The acting leader of Myanmar's shadow civil government has promised to overturn the February military coup d'etat.
Federal democracy, which all ethnic brothers who have been suffering various kinds of oppressions from the dictatorship for decades really desire this revolution, is the chance we can put our efforts together.
Manwin Kang Tan made the comments in the public address via Facebook, where he pledged to protect the citizens in the revolution. The civilian leader was appointed last week as acting vice president by representatives of Myanmar's ousted lawmakers, who are pushing for recognition as the country's rightful government. At least 12 people were killed across the country on Saturday. More than 70 people have been killed since the military toppled the government of de facto leader Aung San Suu Kyi on February the 1st. The coup sparked widespread protests and the strikes, which have met a severe crackdown from the ruling junta. That's a wrap for this news bulletin. Goodbye.
A diverse range of programs. Spirituality. Youth. Eastern Tales. Roundtable Discussions. Culture. Politics. All produced by IRIB English Radio.
Could you tell a little about yourself?
I'm Eric Shumanandi from India.
I was born actually in London, England.
I'm a journalist by profession.
I'm 20 years old and I'm a student of physics. My dad, who taught me the art of
Listeners Special.
In the name of God, the compassionate, the merciful. Salam, dear listeners, and welcome to this week's edition of Listeners Special on this beautiful Sunday, March 14th, 2021. I'm Atefeh Erfani, hosting this program today. Listeners Special is the Sunday program where your views are presented through emails and letters. So, contact us and tell us what you think about our broadcast. Or if you have any messages for our dear listeners around the world, then record your voice, send it to us, and get your voice heard. Remember, dear listeners, Listeners Special is your program. It's your views that are important. This is Listeners Special. Welcome to the program. As usual, many of you have taken the trouble of sending us reception reports. These reception reports are very important and useful to us in IRIB English Radio, especially to our technicians and engineers. These reception reports, as you may know, enable us to provide a better service to our dear listeners throughout the world. All of you who have sent in a reception report will be receiving a QSL card from IRIB English Radio in normal times. However, these days, due to the coronavirus pandemic, please don't expect a QSL card from IRIB English Radio. As you may know, sending any material on behalf of our radio is temporarily halted due to the pandemic, and that's because of international hygienic protocols. However, my colleagues in IRIB English Radio are preparing eQSL cards for our dear listeners around the world. So please be patient. That's the only thing we can say. And here I truly appreciate those of our listeners who have kindly sent us reception reports, including Siddhartha Batar Charji from India, one of our regular listeners, Pietro Arado from Italy, and Malek Shoaib from India. Siddhartha, Pietro, and Malek, we want you to know how much we value your support and commitment to IRIB English Radio. Many thanks for sending us reception reports. Also, a million thanks to those of our listeners who have kindly sent us letters and emails from around the world, which I mentioned some of the names here, and later during the program, I'll read their emails and letters, including an email from Paul Makuza from Uganda. Paul Makuza is one of our regular listeners, for your information. Mahfuz from Bangladesh has sent us an email. Mahfuz is one of our old listeners. Also, Arontio from the Philippines, one of our regular listeners, has sent us an email. From Finland, we have an email from Yari Karhonen. Yari Karhonen from Finland is one of our regular listeners. And also, the last but not the least, is an email from Igor Nogueira from Brazil. Dear listeners, please stay with us until the end of the program. I will be back with all these kind messages just after the music. Mm. Welcome back. This is Listeners Special, and I'm here with a lot of emails and letters from around the world, including an email from Paul Makuza from Uganda. Paul Makuza from Uganda, one of our regular listeners, says, "Dear friends at IRIB English Radio, thank you so much for your kind reply to my emails. IRIB English Service listeners in my region have rated your transmission and broadcasting to this area very well. We receive you via a shortwave receiver here, and we thank you so much for broadcasting in English language. We have been listeners of your radio since a long time here in our village located in East African state of Uganda. We enjoy your program so much, especially the world news. We wish you all the staff of IRIB English Radio a good working day. Looking forward to receiving a response from your respectful service. Best regards from Uganda." Salam and greetings to you, Paul Makuza from Uganda, and lots of gratitude to you for writing this encouraging and inspiring email to IRIB English Radio. So, you rated IRIB English Radio in your region as very well. I mean, regarding the transmission and broadcasting, that's great. It's an honor for us. Also, it's a great news to hear that the signals of IRIB English Radio are heard in your region, in your village in East Uganda. It's a great pleasure. Anyway, we also wish you and your fellow countrymen the best. Write to us soon. We are looking forward to hearing from you very soon in the future. Wish you all the best, Paul Makuza from Uganda. From Bangladesh, we have an email from Mahfuz. Mahfuz is one of our regular listeners who says, "I'm a regular listener of your IRIB English Radio. I should say that IRIB English Service programs are quite interesting and informative. Also, your website, which I visit on a daily basis, is a useful source of world news. I appreciate your efforts at IRIB English Radio." First of all, salam and greetings to Mahfuz from Bangladesh, and deep thanks for writing this message to IRIB English Radio. We're so glad that you assessed our broadcast in IRIB English Radio as well as our website as you said, quite interesting and informative. And as you said, you use them as a source of information. It's a great honor. We in IRIB English Radio always try to provide the best quality of broadcasts and programs to our dear listeners from around the world. Anyway, wish you all the best. Mahfuz from Bangladesh, write to us soon and tell us your views about our programs. Dear listeners of Listeners Special, I will be back after a short music. Welcome back. We have an email from the Philippines. This email is from Aaron Tio. Aaron Tio is one of our regular listeners who says, "Dear IRIB English Radio, I am Aaron Tio from Manila, Philippines. I'm enclosing details of shortwave radio reception for IRIB English Radio. As I said, I'm listening the broadcast from Manila, Philippines. When I tuned in, I heard some Persian music, I presume, which was so lovely. I hope that my reception report would be acknowledged with QSL verification card. I wish you all good health and happiness. Let's stay strong and fight the coronavirus epidemic." Salam and greetings to you, Aaron Tio from the Philippines, and thanks a lot for writing this email to IRIB English Radio. Aaron, you're one of our regular and old listeners, so please tell us which broadcast you like the best. Tell us your views about our broadcast. Many thanks for writing this email to us. You also, Aron Tio from the Philippines. Stay safe and healthy and keep in touch with IRIB English Radio. From Finland, we have an email from Yari Korhonen. Yari Korhonen is one of our regular listeners who says, "Hello from Finland. I'm very delighted to inform you that I was able to catch the signal of your radio. Many thanks for your nice broadcast. It would be a pleasure to receive your verification. If my reception report is in accordance with your program blog of that date and time. A verification card, a letter, or simply an email with a mention that I have correctly reported your station would be much appreciated. I'm 64 years of age and a doctor by profession. I live in Tohmajärvi, a small town near Helsinki, the Finnish capital. My hobbies include listening to foreign radio stations, music, geography, traveling, and sports. I started this radio hobby already in 1970, and I have received verifications by now from 5,000 broadcasting stations in 237 countries. I'm looking forward to hearing from you in the near future. Best regards. Salam and greetings to you, Yari Korhonen from Finland, one of our old listeners. It's a great pleasure that you've managed to receive the signals of IRIB English Radio in your city in Finland. As you said, you live in a small town in Tohmajärvi. I wish I'm correct in pronouncing that name. As you said, it's near Helsinki, the Finnish capital. Anyway, Yari Korhonen, please tell us your views about our programs in your upcoming letters. Tell us which programs you like the best. It's also pleasing that we hear that you enjoyed our programs, as you mentioned your satisfaction about our broadcast. Yari Korhonen from Finland, it was great, your hobbies. As you said, you like to listen to different radio stations, foreign radio stations, music, geography, traveling, and sports. Thank you for sharing your hobbies with us in IRIB English Radio and its listeners. Write to us soon, Yari Korhonen from Finland, and tell us which programs you like the best. We are looking forward to hearing from you. Dear listeners, after a short break, I will be back with other emails and letters from around the world. Stay with us. Well, I'm back with an email from Brazil. This email is from Igor Nogueira. Igor says, "Hello, friends of the Islamic Republic of Iran Broadcasting, IRIB English Radio. It is with great pleasure that I'm sending this message to report listening to the Islamic Republic of Iran Broadcasting in English. My greatest joy is being able to hear stations from far away via shortwave, and this interest comes from childhood. I find interesting to learn about the culture of your country through the radio rather than the internet, and my interest does not end. I hope that you read my email." Salam and greetings to you, Igor Nogueira from Brazil. I do express my appreciation to you for writing this email to us in IRIB English Radio. So, as you said, you're interested in learning about the culture of different countries, and you're very interested to find the culture of Iran, and you emphasize that you'd like to learn about Iran through radio waves. That's natural. You said you like to know about the culture of Iran through radio rather than the internet. Okay, that's natural. I think most people like to receive the signals of radio station through traditional way, that is through radio and shortwave radio. So if you are interested in learning about our country, Iran, and its culture. I suggest you to tune in to the programs like Close Up Iran, Iranian Market, and etc. But Close Up Iran is currently a broadcast on Mondays, and you can find the time and the frequency on our website, that is www.parstoday.com/yen. Anyway, many thanks for writing this email to IRIB English Radio, Igor Nogueira from Brazil. It was a pleasure. Keep in touch with us, Igor Nogueira from Brazil. Oh, well, dear listeners, here we've reached the section of this week's interview, which is conducted with one of our regular listeners. Please take a listen.
My name is Chris Jensen. I'm living in Belgium. I'm Belgian. I'm working as a civil servant for the government here in Belgium, but I also travel a lot because traveling is my passion, and especially traveling to the Middle East. I have been visiting many countries in the Middle East, and I visited also Iran, which was a very, very nice experience. I'm listening to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran, so Tehran Radio, and several mediums. I'm listening to it on shortwave, but also on the internet and on satellite. And I think that's the future, because a lot of people think that shortwave is an old technology, which is dying at the moment. But I don't believe this. I think if you want to reach the world, you have to use a media mix. So it's not if, but and. So I listen on different medium to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran. So to my opinion, shortwave is still alive, and it's not a dead medium. I think it has still a bright future in it. Yes, I want to send my greetings to everyone, and I call upon them to, if they can, visit Iran yourselves, because, as I said before, there are many misconceptions about Iran here in the Western world, and my experience last year was a wonderful experience. I experienced Iran as a very friendly country with friendly people. It's a very modern country with good infrastructure. And everywhere where I came, people were open to me. People tried to help me. So I'm calling upon the listeners, please visit the country yourself. It's the best way to get an idea about Iran and to learn about the country.
Wishing you all the best, we wrap up this week's edition of Listeners Special. Please keep in touch with Listeners Special and have a good time.
Listeners, your opinion is always important to us. We invite you to spend just a few minutes writing us a letter or sending us an email. We'll be glad to hear from all of our listeners who have any questions or comments about any of our programs. Our postal address is IRIB English Service, PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran. You can also send your emails to EnglishRadio@irib.ir. That is one word, EnglishRadio@irib.ir. Please visit our website at www.parstoday.com/en. Our phone number is 00981-2201-3720. Once again, our phone number is 00981-2201-3720. Our profile is also in Facebook. Our address is www.facebook.com/pasttodayenglish. Thank you all for being with IRIB English Radio.
The Debate.
Hello and welcome to Debate. I'm Marzia Hashemi. Thanks so much for being with us. Well, as both the U.S. and the U.K. Talk about non-proliferation for other countries, both of them plan on improving their nuclear warheads. A report by The Guardian says there will be an increase in the number of warheads that the U.K. possesses. Meanwhile, Washington is reportedly going ahead with a massive $100 billion program to upgrade and modernize its nuclear missiles, this coming from the only country which has ever used nuclear weapons against a civilian population, the United States.
For the first time since the end of the Cold War, the United Kingdom is planning on increasing its stockpile of nuclear warheads. A report by The Guardian says a review of defense and foreign policy would see an increase of the number of warheads, which currently stands at 180. The review is set to be released next week. The last defense review in 2015 committed the UK to reducing the number of operationally available warheads to 120. The increase is set to be aimed at persuading the US to co-fund a replacement for UK nuclear weapons, also known as the Trident nuclear program. Britain has been heavily dependent on US technology to operate its nuclear weapons in the past 60 years. Observers believe Britain wants to convey to Washington that the UK is still part of the US hegemonic apparatus.
This is a desperate attempt to shore up Britain's fading prestige on the world stage as a major power and trying to prove to Washington that it is still part of Washington's hegemonic apparatus and is still a valued partner. It is no secret that the Biden administration looks poorly on Brexit. And this is a desperate attempt, as I say, to compensate for the ravages of Brexit.
The United Kingdom is not the only country looking to expand its nuclear arsenal. Just days ago, reports came out that the United States, which already possesses nearly 6,000 warheads, is also planning on building a new nuclear missile worth $100 billion. The Federation of American Scientists says that this plan is being driven by intense industry lobbying rather than a clear assessment of the purpose of the new intercontinental ballistic missile. This is while the Biden administration is gearing up for the first defense budget, which may reveal its intentions as regards the nuclear missile. Also, Israel is believed to possess hundreds of nuclear warheads, though it has never openly acknowledged it. Tel Aviv has always turned a deaf ear to international calls for nuclear transparency. With the support of the United States and other Western countries, the occupying regime has even refused to join the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty. Both the United States and the UK are signatories to the NPT. As parties to the treaty, they have pledged not to acquire or exercise control over nuclear weapons or receive assistance in the manufacture of such devices. The Western states' possession of such nuclear arsenal raises the question as to why they are pressuring other countries like Iran not to develop nuclear capabilities for civilian purposes. This is while multiple reports by the International Atomic Energy Agency have verified the peaceful nature of Iran's nuclear program. All in all, with the U.S. being the only country that has used nuclear weapons against another nation and its massive use of depleted uranium weapons at civilian areas in Iraq and Syria, one would argue the legitimacy of the West to possess nuclear weapons.
I'd like to welcome my guests to this debate from the Campaign for Nuclear Disarmament and Stop the War Coalition, Jim Brann, out of London, and co-director of International Action Center, Sarah Flanders, out of New York. Thank you both for being with us. Let's start this off in London. And Jim, why do you think that the UK is planning to increase the number of its nuclear warheads, especially when the country is going through such a major economic pressure? Why now?
Well, I'm surprised that it's actually planning to increase the number of warheads. So that came as news to me. But the general line that Britain is increasing its military spending, for example, there was a surprise announcement about 3 or 4 months ago that came completely out of the blue, where Prime Minister Boris Johnson announced an extra £16 billion for so-called defence spending on top of the regular budget. And that's consistent with a whole trend in recent years. And for example, this year, in a couple of months' time, they're going to be sending a British aircraft carrier, one of these brand new aircraft carriers, to the Pacific, and it's interesting to note that it will be escorted by a United States warship, and it will carry on it, the aircraft carrier will carry on it, half its complement will be from the United States Marine Corps Air Force. So that shows you the extent to which Britain is dependent, even for its so-called independent aircraft carrier, on the United States, and needs to come under the wing of the United States if it's to follow its trajectory for the last, well, basically since the end of the Second World War. And its nuclear policy fits in with that. So in general, it's not a surprise, although I am shocked they're actually going to increase the number of warheads. As far as the money goes, I'm afraid there seems to be no object.
Well, Sarah, let me try to get Sarah in on this conversation. The U.S. is also in the middle of a pandemic and major economic strain. Under the Trump administration, announced the increase of $100 billion upgrade to its nuclear weapons. Why is that the case? Why is that a priority in your perspective?
The U.S. military budget is an enormous, a spectacular multi-billion dollar subsidy to the largest U.S. corporations. And every single year, under both Republican and Democratic administrations, the U.S. defense budget grows 3 to 5%, and always with a new excuse of modernizing weapons, whether it's aircraft carriers, jet aircraft, nuclear weapons. And it's intense lobbying among the different major defense contractors. Now, the Biden administration, their top appointees come directly from the top defense lobbying corporations, the West Exec Advisors, the Pine Island Capital Partners. These are defense lobbyists, and that's where General Austin, retired General Austin, and Blinken, Secretary of State, come directly from. So yes, they want to increase the budget because nothing else right now in the U.S. is making money. So this is guaranteed profit. It puts the whole world at risk. It's complete hypocrisy that this is needed for defense. Of course, it would end life on this planet. And it's a completely insane and yet profitable. That is what drives it, and it is what is driving Britain right now as a junior partner of the U.S., having cut ties with Brexit. Where are they going to go in the world except to be the junior partner tagging along and also bankrupting the people of Britain, the working people, just like the working people here who desperately, desperately need help, and instead it's going to a huge new handout, modernizing nuclear weapons. What an outrage to the entire world.
Well, Jim, why do you think we not hear an outcry from international agencies such as NPT or International Atomic Energy Agency about these proposed upgrades of these weapons of mass destruction by the U.S. and the U.K.?
You cannot find a more consistent example of complete hypocrisy on the part of the nuclear powers regarding the question of nuclear weapons. You can't do it. For example, we are now 75 years since the first meeting of the United Nations General Assembly, which occurred in London, in a bomb-ravaged London, 5 months after the bombing of Hiroshima and Nagasaki, the atomic bombing of Hiroshima and Nagasaki. And the United Nations General Assembly met in London before any other institution of the United Nations had been established. There was no General Secretary, the Security Council hadn't been convened. UN General Assembly met in London, and resolution number one of United Nations General Assembly of January 1946 was concerning the abolition of nuclear weapons. And October that year, a few months later, British Cabinet Committee met in secret and decided to go ahead with building a British atomic bomb for reasons of British power, and they explained that there was no other reason for it, and also relations with the United States. That's how things have remained for 75 years. Last month, January this year, the nuclear ban treaty came into effect. And that's the vast majority of the world backing the abolition of nuclear weapons. The call of 75 years ago that nuclear weapons must be abolished. So there is total hypocrisy. You can't find any stand of US, Britain, and to a different extent other nuclear powers. You can't find anything but hypocrisy. Nothing makes sense. Unless you understand that nuclear weapons are a weapon of blackmail. They're not a weapon of defense, they're not a weapon of deterrence. They're a weapon of big power blackmail with the supposed right to blow the world up.
What about that, Sarah? You heard what our guest in London said. There's nothing more hypocritical than the way these countries and also so-called international agencies respond in dealing with nuclear weapons or nuclear proliferation. Your take on that, and why do you think that is the case? Because we see a vast difference in the way some countries are treated. We're talking about UK and US tonight. And then on the other hand, we have a country such as Iran with a peaceful nuclear program that is treated totally opposite on the other end of the spectrum.
Well, I couldn't agree more. It is absolute hypocrisy. The U.S. threatens the world with first strike nuclear weapons, including countries that have no nuclear defense. And it is the greatest hypocrisy, the charges against Iran developing nuclear energy, and for that, sanctioning Iran. Now, the sanctions against Iran predate Iran developing any form of nuclear energy. The sanctions on Iran have always been an effort to regain U.S. control and domination of Iran, has no other purpose. And even tacking on Iran developing nuclear energy, as if that's a great threat, it's a very important part of modern industrialization, and charging that that's a nuclear weapon, while this building of nuclear weapons continues unabated. Modernization, new generation, the nuclear weapons of Israel, the nuclear weapons of the surrounding countries. It's complete hypocrisy. Everyone understands it, but the U.S. is a big threat, so of course international and U.N. agencies go along with what is a total charade in the most outrageous, really, way, and a complete this is a theft of world resources on a huge scale. When you're talking about hundreds of billions of dollars, and I want to say the whole defense budget in the U.S., not only nuclear weapons, is enormous theft of resources. They'll spend, yes, almost $2 trillion in 30 years' time on nuclear weapons. But they'll spend in 2 years that on the defense budget, which is all kinds of other weapons all thrown in. Different corporations are vying for the contracts, and that's what you see being played out in the media. But none of them want to let go of these guaranteed profits. And that is what it's about. It is about profits, a direct subsidy from the U.S. government, from the British government, to big contractors. It's not about anything else. Mm-hmm. And it's certainly not about peace. It's not about ending nuclear weapons. It's about more weapons.
Well, how dangerous is that, Sarah? It's profit. You just said profit. So profit over people's lives. Right. I mean, where do we stand with that? It's as if these entities are basically rogue states and will do whatever they want at any time because of the dollar.
They are rogue. Yes, they are rogue states. They're rogue states to their own population. Here is the U.S. with the highest COVID infection and death rate in the world. And the U.S. and Britain are neck and neck in terms of percentage of the population suffering infection and death. And yet they have billions to spend on direct handouts to the biggest corporations. Yet for the population itself, is there the tracking? Is there the tracing? Is there the vaccines available? Is there the health care available? There's simply not. Mm. Is there the public medicine available? There's absolutely not. And they stand there acting like they're helpless. Or in Congress today, you see, okay, this is great, a $1.9 trillion package of economic relief. Most of it, again, goes to the corporations. A tiny fraction goes to working people. A little tiny handout that would pay less than 2 months of rent.
Right.
So this is all hypocrisy on another level, but it is intended to get this through quietly, all by sleight of hand. You'll see a whole series of articles about why this or that weapon needs to be modernized and is part of defense. It's defense of profit. It's not defense of the population
okay.
here.
Let me get Jim back in on this. Jim, you know, Sarah had talked about, when we talked about international agencies, that basically because the U.S. is powerful, that these other countries are intimidated and go along with the U.S. I wanted your perspective on that. Is it that they are intimidated, or basically have these international agencies, they've been set up in a way that they're actually less international than more U.S. or Western control to begin with?
Yes, I'll give you one, I think, example that's very relevant to what you mentioned earlier. We are now 40 years I think it's this very month, we are 40 years since Israel bombed an Iraqi nuclear reactor, which Iraq had bought from France, and had actually supplied to Israel itself, the same basic reactor it had supplied to Israel earlier, but it also supplied it to Iraq. And 40 years ago, Israel said, well, if Iraq develops nuclear technology through this nuclear reactor, wasn't inherently military, it was just a nuclear reactor, then Iraq will have the capacity or increased capacity to go for a nuclear weapons program. So Israel bombed it. And that was a gross, blatant violation of everything that was agreed, especially in 1945 with the conclusion of the Second World War and the setting up of the United Nations and so on. And it's interesting to note that the United Nations Security Council met very quickly after the Israeli bombing and condemned it and said it was a gross violation of the basis of international law and called upon Israel to join the treaties, the NPT, and I think also the International Atomic Energy Agency. And that's how the resolution stood. On the face of it, it looks absolutely clear-cut.
But actually, at the end, nothing really happens.
If we just finish it, it mandated the Secretary General of the United Nations to report, I think it's every 3 months, to the